What's happening, my debt-free millionaire zealots? Hey, this is Zach Edwards for another debt-free millionaire podcast and personal finance course. Today, we're going to be talking about something that people love talking about. It's buying their first house or buying a new home. So what I'm going to do is, first off, if you can see how I'm dressed, this is because I was actually out working on my house. So in the morning, start back a little bit further. Yesterday, my son got a call and somebody wanted to mow their lawn. Well, that's great and all, but the lawnmower that we've had for the last 9 years, it still works fine, but it doesn't collect grass. And we don't like mulching and leaving the grass on the person's lawn. So we actually like to bundle it up, throw in a trash bag and throw it away. Here's the problem. With our old trash can, our old lawnmower, we couldn't do that. So we actually had to go out and buy a new one today. So I went off like normal, dropped off my girls at daycare, and drove over to Home Depot. Now, the only reason why I like Home Depot is because last time I bought one, they had the Honda lawnmower with a Briggs & Stratton engine. Problem was, they didn't have the Honda lawnmower with the Briggs & Stratton engine anymore. They had this $579 lawnmower. And you know what? Right now, I don't want to spend $579 on a lawnmower that does the exact same thing as it would a $379 lawnmower. Fun enough, the $379 lawnmower had the Briggs & Stratton engine, and that's what I wanted. It wasn't the Honda, though I like Honda. It wasn't the self-propelling, which is great because it did have that. It didn't have that it had mulching, though it did have that. It was the Briggs & Stratton engine. I've had a really good experience with Briggs & Stratton. We actually didn't put oil in our lawnmower. I don't suggest that ever. But we didn't do that for the whole 9 years. And we were just waiting for it to go kaput, and it just kept going. So we kept using it. Finally, actually last year, while I was mowing someone's lawn, or actually it might have been my son that was mowing someone's lawn, the guard that basically keeps stuff from flying back up at you when you don't have your bag on, that thing basically ripped off. And because it ripped off, all of a sudden things were being kicked back. So we put the bag in for the lawnmower, and that did well, except that the funnel going into that bag also wore off. And now we were left with a lawnmower that did cut, but we have to wear the bag or keep the bag on, and we have to put it on recycle. So we couldn't collect the material. So I was like, okay, it's finally complete. So we're actually gonna probably sell it, let someone know of all the issues, but we could probably make $50 off of it at least. Sell that lawnmower. We just bought another one for $379 from Home Depot. And it is, again, the Briggs & Stratton engine. And the same power as I bought 9 years ago. So I really actually don't feel like I lost anything. I gained something. But I did spend, again, another $379, which I wish I didn't have to spend, until the thing went completely kaput. So either we sell the new one and make up some of the money, or we keep it for just in case. We'll see what happens. But the reason why I'm bringing this up, because that is part of having a house. If you own a house, you have to prepare for cutting your lawn, doing the cleaning up the bushes. And if you have a garden, you're gardening. There's a lot of things that happen with the house. And that's just on the exterior of the house. Yesterday, I had to clean out the furnace and get it ready for the AC to start up, because the house was getting hot. It was up to 80 degrees inside the house. We're like, nope, it's done. We need to get the furnace ready and get it started. So we actually took out the filter, found out it was dirty, couldn't find a replacement. So we actually had to run the furnace on 1 day's worth of a dirty filter. But again, I was going to Home Depot, bought a 3-pack. Again, like I was talking about last week, buying in bulk. And we saved, I think, about $3 on all of our filters. It was almost getting three for the price of two. So we were able to get that, and I was able to get the furnace started. Right now we have settling. When we bought this house, we knew that the house would settle, that there were actually issues with the foundation because there was cracks in the house. Well, we had it fixed. Well, the company tried to fix it and didn't exactly fix it, though they tried. So they're actually coming back. They have a warranty on it, and they've marked up my house so that in the next few months, they're gonna come back, measure those measurements and see how much is dropped. And if it's dropped, they will actually fix the piers and pay for the concrete and everything else that needed to get done in order to be able to make my house whole. So it's great. I had a warranty from a reputable company that's been around for a long time, and they're going to fix it. But these are all things that you have to worry about when it comes to buying a house. So, and this is why I say rent. Rent is not an issue. It's not a hard thing. It's not, it takes a lot of the stress off of you. You may be paying somebody else for their property and they're getting the equity out of it, but that's only for a year or two or three until you can save up the money that you need to pay at least 20% down on a house. It used to be people are like, oh yeah, I only have to pay 5% or 10%. Then it got down to zero. And I actually did. I bought a house at 0% interest, down payment, but it had a little bit higher interest rate. Well, interesting enough, there's a lot of things that have happened, but when that interest rate climbs and you have like an adjustable rate mortgage, your interest rate will climb. You'll have to pay more because it climbs. Most people get a traditional mortgage, which means it stays steady. The amount that you owe them every month will stay steady no matter what for the next 30 years, as long as you pay. Again, let me restate that, as long as you pay. So today we're going to go over home ownership. I'm going to tell you actually a little bit of a story. We're going to go through my life as a home buyer and some of the issues that I found while doing that. Well, first off, I want to show you. This is what my front yard looked like probably a few days ago. Now, you see those little white guys? This field, if not taken care of, will turn into this field. And I don't want that field because every single one of those little white little things is a seed pod. And every time that a seed pops off of there, that's one more dandelion that I have to fix, that I have to kill. And I can kill it with weed killer, or I have to lawn mower it. Now, with mowing the lawn, you actually have to cut it three times on average. Basically, what happens is, and sorry if you're not that interested in this, sorry, go along with this because it goes more into the house, owning a house. But this is the seed pod. This is the beautiful little dandelion that comes up. But if you see this dandelion, this is coming. And it's not just this one. It has brothers and sisters. See, look at this. Brothers and sisters. And then when one of the seeds pop off and go into the ground, it creates cousins. And then the whole family moves into your yard. And it goes everywhere. So when you come through and mow the lawn, you actually chop off, boom, boom, these two. Next day, these two pop up. They move fast. This is like the most efficient plant you will ever find in nature because it knows how to spread its seeds the fastest, and it has defense mechanisms. And I'm not saying defense as it will fight you back, but watch. So day one, I cut these. Tomorrow or the next day, these two pop up, and they're not these beautiful things. They are these ugly things. And so when those pop up, you have to cut them right away or the seeds will be spreaded and you're going to have a lot more dandelions. I could show you across the street. So my yard has a moderate amount because I cut the dandelions as soon as possible. Across the street, they have a whole bunch of dandelions. I mean, it's like the whole yard. You can't step in the yard without stepping on a dandelion. And there's one even worse. It's like every time you step, you usually step on like two or three dandelions. And dandelions don't like to share land. So that is packed in. So there's no grass on that yard. But when you kill those two, these two pop up. And it usually takes about three, maybe even four or five times, depending on how much space you give it, because not every dandelion is going to be the same. But most dandelions, a single one, takes about three times to be cut. So the first few weeks of the spring, you're going to have to cut it three or four times because you do not want those to come back throughout the summer. You want to kill them off the first few weeks when they start popping up, and then they're gone for the rest of the year. That's a great thing. Okay, going into my story, I said I was going to share my story. Let's go into my story. Okay. So let's go into the next picture. So this is my house back, how many years ago? This was back in 2005, 2006. I bought this house starting off as a superintendent building houses. I thought it was the best thing ever. I was going to be in this house and I could move up to a better house afterwards. Well, while I was living in this house, about a year later, the 2008 recession happened. What happens to the 2008 recession? Actually, let me give you another picture so you can see what it's like. 2008 recession is when, people lost their jobs. A lot of people lost their jobs. I included lost my job because I was in residential construction. That was the biggest industry to get hit. So during that time, actually, my dad came out and visited me, and we built this fence. So that is my fence. And I put it in this gate as well. I also built this garden. Now, mine, I think, was a little bit less. They think they've expanded it since. But the year before I left, they actually had 5 feet of snow. That 5 feet actually puts the snow up to that hand railing right there. That's how much snow was in my backyard and actually everywhere. I actually dug this driveway out probably about 15 times that day because it just kept coming. And even when I was done, like I finished up, I'd have another six inches to a foot on there and I'd have to start over literally 15 times that day. So by the time it finally stopped, actually the next morning when it came out, I still had to shovel it off one more time. And I had a nice open spot for my car to drive. Well, my car was in the garage. And so it could come out. But again, there's 5 feet out here as well. Yeah, so there was a lot. But it was after I had already gotten laid off. So I actually had time to do it. My friends who were still on the job site were actually out at the job site when the snow was coming down. And then they basically were told by the company, I won't mention the name, but the company that built the house said everyone needs to pack up and go home because the snow is still coming and they're still expecting another 2 feet. Well, 2 feet, your car can't drive through it, a regular car. So all of the supers drove home. Some of them even got stuck on the highway trying to get off. Now, again, I'd gotten laid off, so I was at the house. Hey, that's great. So the company had two divisions. It had one in Colorado Springs and one in Denver. They had over 115 people in each of the divisions. All of a sudden, the first layoff happened, and it like cut it in half. I was still there. Second layoff happened, and they had about 100 people in both branches. Then all of a sudden, they laid off the third time. Now, the first people to get laid off, that was great for them because they got all the low-hanging fruit. They had the jobs that were left over. So they got jobs right away. The second ones to get laid off, they found the stragglers. They found out what was left over after the first run had gotten jobs. So they were in a little bit worse suit. So what happened when the third layoff happened? There was nothing left. Everything was taken. So people were not hiring. I was out of work for probably about 6 months. I did have unemployment. It was great. I was able to live off that. But unemployment only goes so far and then it ends. And then all of a sudden, I didn't have the food. I didn't have the money to take care of my family when it came to utilities and food. And I started freaking out. That was the day I got on my knees and I prayed about it. And that same day, I had people that actually showed up on our doorstep, friends of ours, who came over and said, hey, we found you a job. And we're like, great. And it was a completely different industry, but it was a job. So I took the job. We were able to survive. And then I was able to find my next job, which brings me to my next house. So let me just say, with this house, I bought the house for about $180,000. Got a mortgage on it. When I left, I actually had to put it up for rent because no one could actually buy it because it was $20,000 under. That means the value of the house was no longer $180,000, it was between $150,000 and $160,000. So I wasn't going to sell it for that because I owed so much more and I didn't have the money to pay the rest. So I said, okay, I actually had found some friends that needed a house. They were actually, their contract was going over. So I moved them in. He was a police officer. So I felt very safe with him in my house. And the great thing is they had a great house for a few years. The year that they decided to move was the year that we decided to sell. And so they moved, we sold, and we made like, I think it was sold for like $210,000, $220,000. And all the equity that we had. So we made about $70,000. And long story short, we were able to put that into a lot of our medical bills and things that had also come up. Okay. So moving forward here, oops. Okay, fine. Go to the next slide. How do I go to the next slide? Let me do this. Here we go. The next slide. Okay. So I was able to live in beautiful Juneau, Alaska. I moved up there with 3 bags of luggage and rented because we couldn't find a job. And we went up there without any job prospects. But Juneau was still growing. So my sister lived up there. She wanted me to move up there. So we did. This was great because I got to live next to this. Mendenhall Glacier. It was great. We got to walk out to the glacier, especially during the winter. We got to actually climb underneath. They had ice caves. Oh, it was amazing. And sometimes we actually got to see this. That's right, the Northern Lights. It was amazing. Actually, funny enough, this weekend I actually go up to Fairbanks, Alaska. I was just there for my daughter's senior trip. I'm going back up there for a convention, which is great. I love visiting this, and I might actually see some more of this. But long story short, I moved here, and we're like, you know what? We're not buying at Peak anymore. We're done buying at Peak. We're gonna buy a distressed house. And a distressed house is nothing bad, though some people might feel intimidated. It's basically a house that has been foreclosed a lot of times. People have not taken care of it, and so the house is not in the best repair. So if you have the skills to fix up the house, great. It'll help you a lot with getting through buying a house and also fixing it up. We bought the house, had no carpet in the house. It was dirty. Every inch of it was just full of grime and probably smoke and other things. The furnace supposedly didn't work, though we had a friend come over and he said, no, it should work. And we had a hot water heater that supposedly didn't work. And the same friend did some checking and it worked fine. Funny enough, it actually worked the whole 5 years that we were there. And we sold the house without having to replace it. Well, I know we did replace the hot water heater as part of an energy grant that came through our state to upgrade the house to make them all more efficient. And so we did replace that, but the furnace was fine the whole time. And it was supposed to be able to go another 5 to 10 years afterwards. That's a strong furnace. It was actually a pellet stove furnace. So it's not the same kind of furnace that you'd see in a regular house, but that's how they did up in Alaska. And that caused a lot of issues too. We won't go into that. Okay, but so this was great living in Juneau. We bought the house. It was the price of the house itself was valued, if fixed up, at 280. They had actually put it down at 260 to try to sell it as a distressed home. Nobody wanted it as a distressed home because they had to put so much work in it. Then over time, they waited a year. They took it off the market, waited a year, and then popped it back on the market again. This time at 190. So we offered them the first day. This is actually after being denied three or four houses. We put offers on three or four houses, again, lowballing them. They were distressed homes, and we didn't get any of them. My wife at the time wisely told me, hey, let's look one more day, just one more day. I said, fine. She finds this house that had just gone on the market. We jumped on it. We went in the house, saw it, put an offer on. The next day, they accepted the offer. They just wanted to get rid of it. And it was there so, it was there on the market so short of time that nobody else got to see it. As far as I know, no one really got to see it. There may be a few, but we were able to jump on, make the decision, and we're done. When we sell that house, I remember it was valued at 280. We bought it for 190. By the time we moved, we had 180. So we had $100,000 worth of equity in that house. So we sold that house and moved down to, where was it? Beautiful Kansas City. That's right. So Kansas City, I never wanted to live here. I definitely did not want to live here because it had no mountains and it was not clear near the coast. And that was the two things I had grown up with. And I always lived next to mountains or next to the coast. And now I was supposed to go to one of the flattest places, as I knew, flattest places in the world. But we didn't move to the Kansas City side or the Kansas side. We moved to the Missouri side, which does has rolling hills and trees and woods, and it's beautiful in the way that it comes out. You want to see one another thing that's really cool? So at this place, you see all those books? No, that's an actual picture. You know what that is? That is our library. Yeah. They turned this thing into a library, and it's actually, I think, the parking garage. And it looks a little bit different than this, but this is basically what it is. And we have amazing events all throughout the city. And yeah, so it's a great place to live. Come to find out something that I did not understand, and here's another thing that the Kauffman Center, it's one of the great buildings in Kansas City, and it's where you go to see ballets and orchestras and so on and so forth. But one of the great things about Kansas City that I didn't know about at the time when we were first talking about it has one of the lowest cost of living in the nation. Interesting enough, in the last 4 years, that's almost doubled. That's right, the cost of living has almost doubled because of inflation and the current administration and the things that they're doing. But at the same time, I wouldn't change it because it's still, even though it doubled, it's one of the lowest in the country. Not the lowest anymore, one of the lowest of the major cities. So we bought here. We took that $100,000. We actually saved $30,000 of it. We paid $90,000 on another distressed home that had a whole bunch of issues that people had issues with. And I fixed up almost every single one of them myself because I had the ability to do it because I had been trained to do it. So all of a sudden, I move into this $90,000 home. We took the rest of it to survive because I was actually, I left my dream job. And actually, they wanted to keep me on until like another 4 months until basically the state actually got word of it and said, no, you can't do that anymore. It's fine that you're, that he, you need his skills, but he's out of the state now. You need to find someone else. And actually, after I left, they eliminated my position altogether. But I was able to work in Kansas City for 4 more months. But after that, I didn't have a steady income and I had to find a new job. So, and I wasn't let go. I was actually, they allowed me to resign. So I resigned at that point and I was able to live in Kansas City. And because I wasn't getting unemployment, I had to live off of our savings. But we bought this house for $90,000. A few years later, the city that I was in actually decided to upgrade everything. They gave tax deductions to any company that would change the front of their house and or sorry their not front of their house front of their business. So we had a ton of strip malls that were run down and falling apart. They put in a new theater. They put they tore out the whole strip mall and replaced it with something that's amazing now. Everything got a new facelift. And the value of the houses actually doubled in that time. And because it doubled in that time, I was like, this is the best time for me to get out of it and buy a new house. Here's the secret. Here's the greatest thing about this move. So I sold my house. I bought the new house the day that COVID was announced and everything shut down. I put the offer in like 3 days before. They rejected my offer the day before COVID. So I put in an offer with another $10,000 because I again lowballed them. I gave them $10,000 more. So I was buying the house for $200,000. They wanted $220,000. The house was valued at over $300,000. The day COVID came in, they got freaked out. And they said, we don't know what's going on. Give it to him. I got this house. I got this house with $80,000 worth of equity. I had to put $10,000 in the foundation. And if, as I said, it's not fixed yet. So hopefully they'll be able to fix it this time. And I did most of the work. And I put in a new fence. I put in all these different things. And because I was able to do that, I got a house that now is worth over $370,000 that I bought for $200,000. I have $170,000 of equity in that house. Plus, that's just the equity afterwards. Plus, the rest of the money, the other $200,000, is money I already had because I took it out of the house before. So I have a $370,000 house, free and clear. And if I sell it, I can buy another house for $370,000 that might be worth $450,000. Or my hope is actually to buy land, build on it, sell this house, and own that outright for a house I designed myself. Again, I studied to be architect. So let me go over what the actual topic of this whole thing is. And sorry, I've gone along. That was a little bit of a rant, but it tells you a little bit of story about how you can actually make a lot more money doing this and house flipping. Not this. This and house flipping than going through college and waiting 11 years to become a doctor. Now, again, if you want to be a doctor, please do. We need good doctors. But you don't have to. If you're not the type of person to go and be a doctor, you don't have to worry that you're not going to make as much money as a doctor because by the time they graduate, you'll be making as much as they make or more if you follow these steps. So that going forward, let me go over what a first-time buyer house is. Now, a first-time buyer house is not, this, and it's not this, it is this. This is a first-time buyer. So a first-time buyer is basically to give enough money to get into a house. You don't want to buy this or this, especially if you don't have a family. If you don't have kids, there's no reason for you to have this. This is plenty, right? Okay, so because this is plenty, You're going to go in and you're going to say, hey, I have this house. And you're going to hope that the value goes up. Again, hope that that value goes up. Right now it goes up. It's no guarantee that it's going to go up. So if you buy this house, it's probably going to go up less, slower than your other house would, because first-time buyer houses are so much in demand because people can't buy houses right now. There are no first-time buyer houses that are reasonable in price. So buying this, maybe all you can afford, but be okay with that. You're a first-time buyer and you don't have a big family yet. Then you can move into, well, let's not do that. That's in a HOA. That's in a community. I hate HOAs. I love communities. I hate HOAs. HOAs basically tell you what you can do and what you can't do with your own house or with your yard. And yes, for neighborhoods that you can't do a lot of things, okay. If you don't mind having that, that's okay. That allows you to make sure that your neighbors can't do anything to their yards either. That would downgrade the value of your house. But after you have this house, this is my dream. I'll move into this. I'd actually have it a little bit bigger, a little bit taller, and I'd have a rock climbing gym in my house. That's right. I have this dream that I'm gonna actually put one room, like a 10 by 10 room, and you can basically climb on all four sides. And you have self-closing doors just in case there's a fire, and all these different other mechanisms to make sure that my house is safe. Again, this is a dream. I'm working towards it. We'll see if it happens. But how would that be? Having a rock climbing gym from the basement all the way to your second floor. 3 floors worth of rock climbing. Okay, it's just something. Yeah, whatever. Okay, moving forward. So, but if you're gonna get to this house and you wanna get there faster and you don't wanna wait for years to get there, you may have to. Oh, this is another nice house to buy. You may have to buy this. Ooh, and that is a pretty big house. Let's go with this. Oh, actually, that's a really nice house. So, any one of these, but you know what? These houses, they might be valued at $300,000 or $400,000 or even $500,000. But you see the boarded windows? It means it's issues with this house. And that's for you to gain from. So if you bought this house, you would never pay full price. Never pay full price. And you might have to put in an offer on 10 different houses. But the real estate agent doesn't get paid until well, this is not always true right now because something new that just happened in current events about a week ago, it is now possible, they're not quite sure exactly how this is going to turn out, where the seller is not going to pay for both the buyer and the seller anymore. The seller is going to pay for the seller's agent, and the buyer is most likely going to be paying for the buying agent. The reason why this is bad is you can't do this as much as you could in the past, which means you can't buy this type of house as easy as you could in the past. Because I went with my real estate agent in Juneau, we went through what, 5 different houses, putting 5 different offers, getting declined on all of them. Well, it might be that these days, and a buying agent might actually make you pay for each of those, which again is why I have a real estate license. So I don't have to pay someone else to do this. I can do it myself, paying for the process of getting it through. But you can actually buy this house. Say it's worth $400,000, you could buy it for $300. If it's worth $300,000, you could buy it for $200 because there's a lot of issues in there. And as long as you're okay with living in a house that's under construction and or and I should say, being able to fix it, then this is a great house to buy. If you have to pay someone else to fix it up, it's probably not going to be a good buy because you're going to be paying so much money to fix up these things. If you don't learn how to fix these things up, you'll be paying somebody else to do all the work, and you're not going to keep any equity in those houses. So that is one of the skills that you need in order to make this into your dream home, or make this into your first time buying home, and make this have a lot of equity so you can sell it and make a lot of money towards the next house that you buy. So I'm going to teach you how to do this. Okay, look at this house. This is a $500,000 to $600,000 home. Look at the yard. Because of that yard, people are not going to want to buy it. They get scared away with that. When they go inside, they're going to see that it also wasn't taken care of, and they're going to get scared away from that as well. This house might not really have much wrong with it. So one thing that you can do is bring in a handyman. Find, make a friend, find a handyman, to walk through and try to give you a bid on each of the things. Now, you're going to throw them some business. For me, I don't touch electrical and I don't touch plumbing. There are some other things that I don't touch, so they might be doing some of those things. Bringing an electrician through would only mean that he would know anything about electrician, but he wouldn't know about the other things. Bringing the right handyman, they'll walk you through and tell you everything that'd be fixed, and you can say, I can fix that, I can fix that, I can fix that, I can't fix that. I can fix that, I can fix that, I can fix that, I cannot fix that one. Those things that you cannot fix, get somebody else to do. You use a professional. Your handyman might be professional. If he's not, don't use him. You want to make sure that this is done right. Otherwise, you do it, right? Okay. So let's go through the home buying process. There are multiple steps. And when you go through the book, you're actually going to be able to walk through and learn about all these different terminologies. There's a lot of different terminologies, but you should actually know these before you buy a house, because your real estate agent, they're going to sound really smart, but they're just knowing the vocabulary of this time. And in the future, I can actually teach you how you don't actually need a real estate agent on either end. But first, let's go off on this. Okay, when you are buying a house, and this is some of the words that are going to go through, are going to be in here. The first thing you want to do is you're going to want to find the house that you really want, okay? Of course. Walk through with a real estate agent. Now, this is someone that's actually been certified and has a real estate license to sell the house, knows all the forms, and is held liable if something happens that goes wrong. So, not with the house, but if something goes wrong with the process, they can be held liable. Or the title company who actually writes the title for your house, which means they give you ownership of the house. They write the ownership and put it into the record, into the county records. They're also going to be held liable if they do something wrong. These are all professionals. It's like, I don't like electrical, working with electricity or working with plumbing, because I would be held liable for anything that I screwed up. I'm going to give it to the professionals. Those are professionals that you might want to use in this process. So in this house, you walk in and say, yeah, I like this house. What's the next step? Well, you need to put in an offer. An offer is basically saying, I want to buy this house for this price, and this is how I'm going to afford it. I'm going to use this mortgage. I'm going to pay this much up front. The reason why that the seller wants to know that is because they want to know if you're going to pay for cash, because if it's cash, it doesn't matter what a bank says of what the property is actually worth. You're going to be able to buy, they're going to be able to buy that because they're paying with their own money. They're not going to go through a bank who's going to give them a mortgage. And the mortgage is basically what makes them have to actually investigate the house more. So you say, I like this house. You write up an offer. You send it to from your buying agent, because you're the buyer. You're selling it, giving it to your buy from your buying agent. Wow. Okay. Let me slow down. You're going to have your buying agent send it over to the seller's agent. So there's the seller and then there's the agent. The agent used to be, would make a deal with the seller for about 1 to 6% of the selling price of the house. They'd then split it in half and give 3% to this buying agent, 3% to the selling agent. Now, it didn't stop there, because their brokerage that they work for, the company that they work for, would take almost half of it most of the time. So by the time you actually finished, the real estate agents on both sides would only make 1.5% of the whole deal, which can still be a lot. If you're selling a $300,000 home, that is $3,000. Well, $4,500. It's 1.5%, which makes it about $4,500, which is great, because most real estate agents sell maybe one house a month. The really good ones sell 4 or 5, but there's so many agents right now that the average one sells about one to two every month. So that's a good income for them if they can sell the houses. And that's during the summer, because during the winter, it's slower and there's less selling and buying houses. So they have to live off the savings during the rest of the year. So because of this new ruling, you're going to see a lot less real estate agents out there. And the big guys will get what's left over. So we'll see how it all comes out. But so I put this offer on it. Let's say that the sellers decide, no, I don't want like that. They're going to counter offer. They're going to give you what they think, and they're going to lower the price maybe a little bit. And then you're going to come around and counter offer again, Or you're going to say, I like that offer. I'm going to accept that offer. So hopefully you meet in the middle of the two. And by doing that, you have an offer. It's signed on both sides, so they can't sell it anywhere else. They actually have to close down their listing by saying it's pending a sale. It means no one else can look at it, and no one else is going to be able to be sold to. And there's a lot more to it than this. I'm just giving you a very simplified view of it. So I go through this house and I say, hey, I want to inspect this house. So you can send an inspector through. You can send an engineer through. You can send your handyman through. I recommend that you send your handyman through. And if you're not the best at inspecting, you send an inspector too. Basically, you want to be able to make sure that you have everything covered. If there's something wrong with this house, you want to know. And those two people can walk through and give it. Your handyman's going to be for free. Your engineer or inspector is going to be between $300 and $500. It's worth it. It's like getting a paying for a mechanic to look over your car before you buy a used car. You always want to have a mechanic look over your car. With a distressed house, you always want someone to look through your house beyond your eyes, the agent's eyes, and even your handyman's eyes, or just your inspector. You want another set of eyes. Again, people that are trained at doing this. They're going to walk through and give you every single thing, or as much as they can see, that needs to get fixed with this house. And then you can say, okay, this is how much I can make this, how much equity I'm going to have in the house. This is how much I need to fix it up. If there's still equity in there, it might be a good deal. You get a nice house and you pay for it up front, and your mortgage is what your original amount is. The fixing it up has to come out of your pocket. But that also means that you have all that extra money in that house, all that built-in equity. So when you sell the house, it's worth that much more. Let's look at some other things. When you actually close on the house, which means seller transfers that house to you, you transfer the money to the seller at the same time, and you both close on the on your deals. The deal is closed. That 1-6% is the commission for the real estate agent after they close. They don't get any money before. Now, because of the changes, there might be different things that happen. I'm not quite sure exactly. One thing to look at when you see a house that's been on the market, when it's been for sale, is how many days it's been on the market. If it's been within 1 or 2 weeks, that's probably a good buy. Not as many people have seen it, and it might be they might be willing to bargain with you a little bit, but not much, because it's only been on for a few days. If it's been on there for a month or two, they're willing to deal because they want to get rid of this house. Most people, it's because they've already moved out. You can actually see if they've moved out. If they're still living in it, they have a lot more strength because they don't really need to move. And so if they don't need to move, they can hold on to that as long as they want. So we close on this house. The title company, which is the company that does the work to record everything, they record the deed. That's the ownership. They take the ownership from the seller, and they now put your name on it, and they put it into the county records. Now, this is what's considered a distressed house. It might look really nice inside, but the lawn is included when it's a distressed house. Usually means that it was neglected, could have been abused. Most of the time, it's just been foreclosed on. So those are some things. And foreclosed basically means that the owner could not pay its mortgage on the house, and the bank took it back from them. They lost it because the bank took it from them. So there are a lot of different things, that a lot of different vocabulary, but I've already gone over a lot of my time. The one last thing I'm going to actually talk to you about is one of the reasons why there might not be need for real estate agents anymore. It's for sale by owner, FSBO. For sale by owner is basically when somebody, the owner, wants to sell it themselves. They don't want to use an agent. There are a lot of services that for $100, $200, $300, they'll actually provide the forms for you to fill out to do it legally. You know, you're still going to have to pay the title company because that has to be registered. There are ways around it, but they're liable if they do something wrong. Again, you're liable if you do something wrong as well. But buy a house from a for sale by owner, the owner doesn't have to pay commission. You don't have to pay commission. You both win out. So this is a great way. But most people do not feel that they're going to be well represented or know the industry well enough that they're actually going to give their business to an agent who will sell it. So the best houses out there might not be ones for sale by owner. The distressed ones are going through banks trust agents. So you're going to need to work with an agent on their side, maybe not as much on your side, though you might want to do it the first few times because it is a process and it is a long process, and your agent will do that whole process. Let them do it. So if you're buying a distressed house, it might be worth doing that or getting your own license. Except if you're not going to be a full-time real estate agent, it might not be worth it. So these are things for you to know. Look through the book, go through the vocabulary. There's also some activities as well to test how much you know those activities. But this is what's important. This is what I want to get you into. If you can get into this and flip it yourself, putting your time and effort into it, you're going to make $100,000 off this house or $50,000 off this house when you decide to sell it. And if you don't sell it, you're going to live in a really nice house for a lot less money, your monthly mortgage. So these are all great ways. So being a first-time buyer, you can buy houses, not maybe this nice, but you can still buy houses that are nice for less money and actually find houses to move into. Because as of right now, there are very few houses for first-time buyers. And you want those houses because everything else really costs a lot of money. And they continue to go up. So do first-time buyer houses. So you might want to jump in when you can. You have a mortgage. You have the down payment. But we're going to go over that later on. But just know that your debt, this is where your debt is going to be lodged into. You're going to owe the most money out of any of your debts. This is going to be, hopefully, your largest investment. It's not your education, because we already went over that. It's not going to be your transportation, because we're going to go over that. This is where your money is stored, because this is going to give you a return on your investment. Your education, give you a little bit, but not as much as your house. So get educated, get a house when you can, both of those, when you can. Find ways to get it through, and we will help you with those ways. Again, stick with us. We're going to teach you all the trades of the book. Everything that the gurus will tell you, but you're going to have to pay them thousands of dollars for, or tens of thousands of dollars for, we're going to give it to you for free. Minus maybe the book. Pay for the book. It's $14. There you go. Okay? I mean, why not? So again, thank you so much for joining me. And if we haven't made you a debt-free millionaire zealot, we hope to soon. Stay tuned for so much more. I mean, there's so much more coming. And this is evergreen material, which means you're going to be able to come back and watch these things over and over again on our YouTube channel and on our Debt-Free Millionaire podcast. So stay tuned for all of that. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.